Book Award.
Just stand, Love Talk stand by Radio. Yes, it is.
Today is Monday, April 12, 2021, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday to you all, wherever you are, wherever you be. I pray your week, your day is launching off to a great start. Whether you are moving fast or slow today, I know for sure that it took some motivation because it's Monday. And I sincerely applaud you in your efforts to seize the day. And, well, then there's some of the rest of you I know that might be kind of feeling like the turtle right now. Well, please remember that the little tortoise finished his race in first place. So don't despair. Just stay in your lane and keep it moving. That's how you get there. That's how you get to the finish line. That's how you get it done. And you know what else? I'm cheering for you. I promise you I am, indeed. Well, talk about cheering people on. Today, my special guest is one of the brightest stars, I'm going to say in the universe, but for sure, that I've had in my Foxology spotlight. She is an illustrious lawyer and judge, stunning career serving in ways that has helped many, many individuals experience life change futures because of her. She's a dedicated difference maker, a true transformative coach and teacher, a masterful motivational speaker whose words and work are moving those inspired into positive directions and destinies, ones they so rightly do deserve. She is Judge Leonya Loy, and she is my extra special guest today. Thank you for being here with me, Judge Leonya.
Oh, thank you,
I appreciate you
for having me. Thank you for having me.
It's a wonderful delight. It certainly is. How's your day been?
Oh, it's been hectic, but, you know, hey, I'm living, I'm breathing, I'm out there and zooming around, so that's all I can ask for. That's all I can ask for. The rest is up to me.
That is so true. You said zooming around. Does that mean literally you've been zooming on online? Is that what you mean?
Not online. I was in the car. I was in the car, and
oh,
I was
okay.
Zooming back from
You've
Ann Arbor,
roaming.
Michigan, and then came back here. Yeah, so Ann Arbor
okay.
is like, you know, so many miles away from Detroit, and then zooming back. But you know, it's a nice ride, and the sun is trying to come out here in Detroit, but it's peaking. It's peaking its way out. So, you know, it was fine. It was fine.
Well, at least winter is behind us. That's a good thing. Some days we can't tell for sure, but most days now it's looking pretty good. So, well, listen, there's so much to know and learn about what you do, and we got to shove it into a little box today. But, you know, your information and the information about your life and what you do, what you've done has just been just inspiring, truly. Just a wonderful, wonderful story to read about. And I'm just happy to be able to share some bits and pieces of it with folks today. So why don't we just start with you just sharing a little bit of your personal story that brought you up to now?
Okay. My personal story is that, number one, I came into this world not by myself. Most people come by themselves, but I didn't. I came with my twin sister, and my mother didn't know she was going to have two little girls. She didn't know. She thought she was having one baby before ultrasound. So it was a big
wow.
surprise to her, big surprise to the doctor and my father and everybody, but in we came. And life changed their world, and of course ours, because we were twins. But that was the only way we knew to be because we came in this world like that. But because we did, we had each other's back all the time. And my mother didn't have any other kids after us. She said, two is enough. I promised him two. He got two. She said, you didn't get a boy and a girl, but you got your two. So we became extremely close. And we grew up. We had similar taste, and I guess a lot of brothers and sisters that are very, very close, they have a lot of things that they share, and so we did. And we both became teachers, as you mentioned before. We were models, teachers. We went on to be lawyers, and then we went on to be judges. And she was my cheer team, my campaign manager when I ran, and I turned around and did the same for her after I made her run. I said, I need someone that thinks like you. I need someone innovative on that bench with me. I said, a lot of judges go on the bench and they are doing what is a typical thing that judges do, but I wanted the law to be something as a tool that I use to help, you know, make people change from the way they walked into my courtroom. And I wanted it to be a positive experience. I wanted them to be better when they walked out than the way they walked in. And my sister used to call it an empowerment zone. She watched me. This is before she became a judge. She would sit there and watch me in the courtroom. And the thing is that that's why I ran. And that's why after doing that for almost a couple of years, I knew she needed to join me because she thought like me. And she did. She ran. She won. And it was two of us. Then we were the Twins for Justice, you know, and that was our moniker. Mm. But it was to help change the lives of people up until the time of her unexpected death. You know, that's what she was doing. And after she died, I got so many letters from people who appeared in front of her, be it for a landlord-tenant case, be it for a drug case. It was, you know, we did a lot of different types of cases in terms of misdemeanors, et cetera. And, you know, it was something that when people cross our path, how can you make their life better? You know, most people are in a situation when they come to a courtroom, they're not too happy to be in there. They're not too happy to be in there. And something's going wrong in their life. How do you change it and make it a more acceptable thing? It doesn't mean that people don't pay for particular offenses that they've done, but you learn how to pay for it and then push your life forward. How you came in here. I used to tell people, it's not a mistake that you got me. I said, there are 31 judges on this bench. I said, God put you in my courtroom. I said, you were directed here, particularly if it was for drug court. I said, you were directed here. Now, they don't have to do drug court. They can just go to jail. But they would sit there and they would listen. And many times they would get up there and say, I was already planning on doing 3 months in jail. Just get this over with until I heard you.
Mm.
And they said, you know, God must have put me in your courtroom. They said, because I wasn't going to do nothing. I said, let me hurry up and do my time. And they said, but I'm supposed to change my life. I'm here because I'm supposed to change my life. I said, there's no mistake. God don't make mistakes. I said, and he put you in here for a reason. So thousands of people graduated my program, thousands. And all I can say, it was a positive experience for me to watch people's eyes light up and you see sunshine come in. You see no matter what, they walk through that door, they had to see me every single month because they were being monitored, because they had things that they had to do. There was no drugs. There was no alcohol. You were tested 3 times a month. You're going to counseling. You're going to meetings. You're going to job training. You're going to a whole lot of things. Why? Because your life is changing. Your life is changing. And what you had, if it was working before, you wouldn't be in front of me. I said, it wasn't working. I said, after you finish this program, if you want to go back to that life, you're welcome to it. I said, but you won't want to because you're going to discover who you were supposed to be in the first place. I said, the excellence that God has put into you. I said, he's going to put you back on that path. I said, not the one you were on. So that's a little bit about me and what some of the stuff I've been doing. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I want to ask a question because I'm always very interested in what deals in you. Of course, I'm asking this in the broader sense because I certainly understand that it's a calling that's been placed upon your life. But what was it like for you? Tell us what it was like for you when you first understood that, yeah, I've gotten this far, I've got these degrees, I've gotten this position, I need to help some people. What happened? What was that experience like for you when you understood this is not just me being here for now, this is me being here to help people in ways they never could have imagined by coming face to face with me? What was that initial confrontation with God like? I even want to know. What was it?
Well, you know, Silver, can I just call you Silver like that? Can I do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Certainly.
Okay. When, you know, we had a rocky kind of growing up in high school and whatnot because my mother had a nervous breakdown. And we did not understand what that was. We were getting ready to be commencement speakers, and we had been selected to do that because in our school we had it used to be predominantly Jewish, and then it happens in a lot of neighborhoods where the racial balance changes from 70% non-black to 70% black. Okay, some people call it white flight, mm-hmm. You call it whatever you want, but that's the changes that were happening. And so we were the first black commencement speakers of our high school. Okay, that before me and Leona, there weren't any. And she said, I know I'm going to get in trouble picking the two of you, but I stand by my selection. You're in my speech class. You're excellent speakers. You're one of the best that I have. So she put us up there. And my mother, she had graduated. She was valedictorian of her class. And she came from the South. And she was helping us with our speech. Well, little did we know, before that day came, before we would get up there and speak at our graduation, my mother was in the hospital. And they were not going to let her out to come see us. We didn't know what a nervous breakdown was. All we knew is that we saw strange things happening. And we didn't understand why. And we didn't understand why was she taken there. And we began to learn. And this was something I used later on as a judge. And in terms of the brain and how the brain works and the body works, et cetera, every lesson I have learned by going through hard times was something that I could use later on to help people with, okay? And even as a young girl, my sister and I, we had to wipe the tears away and get up there and give that speech the way my mother heard us give it. And we said, she wants us to do this. She said, even though she can't be there. And we did that. Well, at that point, after we gave it, one young man said, wow, are you all going to be ministers? We said, no. We were just teenage kids. And but it came off that way to them. Okay, but that's because of the teaching of my mother. That was her teaching us, okay? So we made it through that, but our mother changed. And our mother wasn't the mother that loving, sweet woman that she was that all the teenagers loved and called her mom. She wasn't her anymore. And even though she did so many things that would just bring us to tears every night, we knew we would have to move from her house. We prayed to God to help us and send us our mother back. We said it took over 20 years for her to come back to herself, over 20 years. But at that time, we just didn't understand. As we learned the lessons and we moved out, we were put in different positions. Different, when I was in the dorm and other girls said, why don't you run for president? You can help us. You can do this. I did it. I joined the Black Student Union, okay, to help with the things we were marching for, to help people get jobs back that they got fired from on campus because they didn't know who else to come to but our Black Student Union. So when I look at the Black Lives Matter and I see that and I see those young people out there and I'm so proud of them, they have that spirit and that spunk, and I knew I was their age and I was up there and I'm standing up against guys that have those rifles and stuff and the headgear and all of that. very nervous, very scared. But if we didn't stand up for her and make the university talk to us about this lady, then who would? Who else would do it? So that thing of helping people started early for me. It started early. When I wanted to run for student council and they said, you're not going to win. There's not enough black students to vote you in. I said, I'm running anyway. I'm running anyway because I'd already met discrimination with a geometry teacher that brought me to tears. But she couldn't break me. She could not break me. And my mother said, I said, Mama, I have to take this course again. And I said, but I know geometry. She said, well, baby, she had told me, she says, I said, Mama, the lady won't even recognize my hand when I raise it to ask a question in class. Why won't she look at me? I said, except she does roll her eyes at me. And so my mother said, you're going to have to teach yourself. I said, what do you mean I'm going to have to teach myself? And she said, start with page one. I can't teach you. I don't know geometry. She said, your daddy doesn't know geometry. She said, this we can't help you with. And I cried, and after I got through wiping my swollen face, I started with page one. After all, my mother told me to do it that way. So I did that, and week after week, I just blocked everything out in class. Lady wasn't calling on me anyway. And I taught myself. Mm-hmm. And when I got up to a certain point, I told one of them, it was only four black kids in that class, and it was an honors class. And I told her, I said, I know geometry. She said, how do you know it? I said, I taught myself. And, of course, another kid looking at another kid says, you're right. And I got a B on the exam. And the lady looked at me, and she said, relatively easy exam. I said to myself, you're not gonna steal my thunder and my joy. Because the boy in front of me, he still got his D. The D he got for every exam, he still got the same stuff. The exams hadn't changed. Okay, it's just that I knew how to do geometry. But when she tried to block me, that's when I learned. It was a lesson God was teaching me. I didn't know it at the time. But it was to make me tougher and not to give up. And that's why, it's one of the reasons this book was written. It was to make sure that the reader understands that they're going to have to go for the goals that they want, that they're going to have to go after the dreams that they want, and it's going to be hard. And they're going to have pitfalls, like my sister and I. We had my mother's. That wasn't the only pitfall for her. She had three nervous breakdowns. She had three. Even while we were in law school, three. Even after my father finally saw us all the way through law school and then he left. That was our heart. But we knew he loved us, and we knew that he stayed for us. Because the lady he married, my mother had four personalities with him, three with us. Four with him. The first one we didn't remember. So when you go through all of that, but you know that there are other people out there that have it even worse than you, and if you look around, and I always, even as a kid, wanted to help someone that needed help. Just wanted to help someone that needed help. Or if you teased a little girl in school because of how she dressed, Leona or I would step up there and help defend this little girl. And one guy said, he told one girl, you know, you're so skinny, you fall through the cracks. And I jumped up, and I'm defending her. And he said, who do you think you are? You're just about as skinny as her. It didn't matter. You know, the help thing, I said, hey, and calling me names or calling me skinny, that didn't bother me. That didn't bother me because I was going to help my friend. So that help thing, the wanting to help people had always been there. It just got bigger and bigger until we were picking professions where we could do that. And teaching was the first one. I wanted to help young people grasp and not go through what I went through in high school. I wanted them to be strong. I wanted them to challenge. That was my goal as a teacher. And I'm in contact with some of those kids now on Facebook. And they have families, they have kids that have grown up, and they said, Judge Lloyd, you taught me, and they start telling me what I taught them. And I smiled, and I said, these kids actually remembered what it was I was trying to do with them. So to hear them say it back to me, and then I look and I see, what have they accomplished? And they, all of them had gone on and gotten degrees and did this and did that. I was very proud because that's what I wanted to do, but it didn't stop there. I wanted to do more. How can I help even more people? I figured as a lawyer. We were going through the civil rights movement at that time. People needed legal help, and you hardly saw black lawyers. And I said, I think I want to go to law school. Now, we are almost finished undergrad at this point. I'm making this new announcement to her. And we're looking at this show, and she said, so do I. See, again, we kind of thought on the same vein. And and I said, Leona said, but you know, we almost finished, you know, undergrad. We got our teaching thing. And I said, well, I'm going to do that. But you set another goal. And that's what I want the listeners to hear today. You set another goal. Doesn't mean you don't finish your goal. You finish it. You finish what you start. And that doesn't mean you can't set another one. So I set another one. I got to get a car. You got to get a car. We got to be able to get to the job with being a teacher. And I said, but once I pay that car off, I'm going to law school. I said, 4 years to pay the car off. 4 years, I'm in law school. And that's exactly what I did. And I wanted to help people, and I did that. But again, after doing that, and we started out groups, Ready for the World was one of the biggest ones. We started out multi-million dollar contracts. And they did the Oh Sheila song. It bumped Prince's song down to number 2 on the national Billboard charts. And their song went up to number 1. And as much as that was fun, it was glamorous, and even in the midst of helping people, it still was a very glamorous job to do. And we still did the regular law as well. But then I said, I want to do more. And that's when I decided to run for judge. And that was definitely the calling I should have done. And it was a step-by-step-by-step movement. And I pray every day, you know, for God to give me the wisdom, because I didn't know what was going to come in front of me. And sometimes case managers would say, Judge, how do you know how to say the right things? I mean, you say all this stuff to these people, and we're writing notes ourselves, and we're the case managers. And I said, I don't know. It comes to me, I said, this is a gift. I'm just a tool that God uses. And they said, well, I'm just letting you know. I know you're talking to our clients too, but I'm listening to you too. And I would kind of chuckle. But that's how that, you know, that urge to really want to help people, it started so early.
You know, it's so awesome that everything that you, I mean, I was hanging on to your words myself. Let me keep it real. It was really quite a story. And very inspiring and motivating. I wrote a couple of notes myself. It's amazing.
Okay.
I love infusions of inspiration. So that's why I have folks like you on. I love it. I absolutely love it. But I wanted to say something to your gift, because I think of an old auntie. She's not with us anymore, but something she always said to me was that what comes from the heart reaches the heart. And I think about all of the people who come in contact with the people that you came in contact with, like the caseworkers and that. And they're coming from a different place. You know, they're coming from strategy and what they know they're supposed to do and make things line up. And they see you and it's like, oh, I have an opportunity here.
Exactly.
And God, we're not going to miss it. So it's a whole other ball game. That's what the difference there is. Well, let's shift now, and thank you for sharing all of that. It's just beautiful. Let's talk about that new book that you just got, Excellent Award for Your Honor, A Journey Through Grief to Restorative Justice. How'd you come up with that title?
Well,
so I know the Your Honor, Your Honor.
Your Honor, there was an article done on us in a newspaper article when my sister was becoming a judge, and I was training her, you know. And so the Detroit News, it was a very big deal to them because they didn't have twins on the bench at the same time here in Michigan, in basically the world, really. But at the same time, sitting on the same bench, they're identical twins. And so, and the name of that article was Your Honor, comma, Your Honor, because here we both come. And if you're ever in a room with a bunch of judges, and this was kind of new to me when I first became a judge, I might be talking to one or two judges in the hallway, and then someone comes up to us because they need to talk to one of the judges. We don't know which one. And they'll say, excuse me, judge. And or they'll say, Your Honor, or judge. And all of us look up and say, yes. We didn't know which one they wanted. So, you know, and then with me and her, they said, when my sister won, they said, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? How are we going to tell them apart? Well, Leona's name is spelled different than my name, okay? And that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. I said, well, her middle initial is L and mine is J. That's not enough. That's not enough. And I'm like, we're going to call them number one and number two. I said, that doesn't make any sense to me, but if you all think it makes sense, fine. And so different files would come in, and you see a big number one on it. That was supposed to be me. I was the first one getting there. Then Leona would be number two. And we were on Montel Williams' show, and he asked, he said, I heard you call number one and number two. And Leona said, yep. She said, I came into the world first, but my sister came in second. But this is the first time I'm number two. And so, not number one. And, you know, my sister had a real, real kind of weird thing of a comedy. She'd make you laugh. She'd make you laugh on the bench. She'd make jokes, et cetera. And I was no different. You know, like I said, I trained her, so she watched me. But and sometimes I might even start singing a song up there, and they'd look at me, and I said, if I had you sit in the jury box, it's because you had a sanction, and you're getting ready to go to jail for about maybe 3 days. You got to get your head clear. Stop with the drugs. Stop. Put it down. I caught positive screen. You got to think about this. Counselor's going to come in and talk to you. So Nelly had a song out at that time. It's getting hot in here. And then I said, reminds me of a song. It's getting hot in here. And I started singing. And I look at my secretary. She was my court clerk as well. And I said, should I continue singing? She said, no, Judge. I started laughing. She always said no because I can't sing. But it would make the courtroom just burst out in laughter. I believe that you got to have a little lightness in the courtroom sometimes. Everything can't be heavy, 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 heavy. And so when you make the courtroom laugh, and you know, you just kind of break that, those shackles of fear or whatever. And like one lawyer told me, she said, Judge, every time I come in here, and I don't come in here often, she said, but your courtroom is the only courtroom where when you put somebody in jail, they're waving at you as they take them out the courtroom and say, we'll see you in a few days, Judge. I said, all right. She said, or when they come back, they're telling you how happy they are to see you. I said, yes. She said, people don't do that when you lock people up in jail. I said, but they know why. I said, one time when one guy was gone, it was three of them, and he came back and he said, Judge, I saw the article on you in the paper. It said an angel in the courtroom. I said, yeah. How did you get a newspaper? He said, Judge, they have newspapers in jail. I said, okay, I'm just asking. So then he said, I told everybody, this is my judge. I said, why did you do that?
Oh,
I put
goodness.
You in jail. Why would you tell them that? He said, because we know why we're here. We know how we messed up. You are trying to prevent us from having a permanent record, and you sat us down. He said, you love us. You sat us down. He said, and that's why we're here, and we love you for it. And, yeah, I told everybody, you are judge. And I, how can
oh my
you not
goodness.
Have you know, a full heart as you listen to that. You know, you know, I didn't like putting somebody in a jail. Jail's not a happy place to be. And I made surprise visits to the woman's jail when I wanted to see, pop in there to see them, to make sure things were happening positive for them in there. And they kept the jailers on their toes. And they said, one of the girls said, "Are you supposed to be going to the jail?" I said, "How do you know?" I heard a rumor. I said, "Ain't nobody supposed to know. They're supposed to be." But when I got there, they said, "We just never had a judge come down here and really want to go into the jail." I said, "I want to go into the jail. I want to see my ladies. They're there. They're getting clean. And then they're coming back to me." So I said, "I want to see them." So the lady who was in charge, she took me to the cells, and then she said, "It was like you look down in a pit. You're standing up, you know, with this board and all these switches and stuff." And I said, "I want to go down there." And she said, you actually want to go down there?" I said, "Mm-hmm." She said, "Oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness." I said, "I'm going to be fine." So I got down there, and the girls that were there, and they knew me, they circled me, and they were happy to see me. And she said, "My heart was jumping out my chest. I didn't know what they were going to do." I said, "I didn't have any fear." I said, "Because they know I care. I'm here for them." And I said, and I could not make the jailers understand that, but they watched it. They watched it. A couple of the other girls said, "Who's she? Who is she?" They said, "That's our judge." "Your judge? Your judge came into the jail?" They said, "Excuse us, we're going over here to see our judge." So, you know, it's you know, that's what it was for me in terms of how I look at things. And that's what this book is about. That's what the book is about. Mm-hmm. You know, the steps that were taken by Leona and I, and the roads, the hurdles that we had to go through. Because people would look at us and think, "Oh, they've had it made. You know, they don't look like they've suffered a day in their life." I said, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" I said, if they only knew the amount of tears we cried. I said, but it was a journey that we had to learn from. God put us on that journey, you know, and we had to learn from it. But it taught us how to be tough. It taught us how to be fair, and it taught us how to fight for people. And so even though we were put in a position to make decisions over people, it was about being fair. It was about being fair and letting people have a voice and letting them be heard. And that is a problem in today's society. You know, I hadn't even been on the bench for, I don't know, maybe a year. And I was doing my cases like I normally did. And one little white boy had got up there. It was all I remember was traffic matter. And I gave him an assessed a fine. And he had pled guilty, assessed a fine. And he used to sit and get his paperwork, and then he leave. And then it has on there how many days he has to pay the, you know, before any warrants go out or anything like that. But he went in the back and he sat down. And I continued. I had a whole courtroom full of people. And in Detroit, that was one of the largest courts in the country, was the court I worked on. So we had a lot of people going in and out of there, almost like an airport. And he sat and he sat and he sat. So when I got to the end of my docket, and I said, "There's one more guy." And they said, "Well, Judge, he wants to speak to you." And I said, "Okay, well, tell him to go up to the podium." And he went to the podium, and I said, "I remember you. You were here early this morning. You were one of the early cases." And he said, "Right." And I said, "Okay, you still here? Is there a problem?" And he said, "No, I had something to say to you." I said, "Fine." Again, I let a person talk. Mm-hmm. Now, did I know what I was going to be hit with? No. But I just believe in letting people talk. And so he said, "You know, you talked to me when I was up here." I said, "Yes." And he said, "I mean, no, you really talked to me." He said, "And you looked at me." I said, "Yes." And he said, "I've been in a lot of courtrooms, and that ain't nothing to brag about." He said, "But barely sometimes do they even look up above the paper." he said, and don't know my name after except reading it. He said, but nobody talked to me. They talk at you and then tell you what you're going to pay, and that's it, and that's all. He said, but you actually talk to me. And I said, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. And he said, well, just never change. Don't change. I said, I can't.
Wow.
I got, this is who I am. I said, I can't change who I am. And I never forgot that. He waited an hour and a half after his own case was finished to tell me that. So that meant something to him, you know, and it's about letting people, even if you're pleading guilty to something in front of me and I would listen to you, and they said, but I have something I want to explain to the judge. And sometimes lawyers who are rushed say, well, right now the judge got some more cases and she can't hear what you got to say, and now, you know, let's move on, sir, let's move on. I said, stop. What do you want to say? And then he would say, I just wanted you to know why I did what I did. I said, okay, tell me. And so he would tell me, and I would explain to him. And this, like, one case that comes to mind, a man who, they were arresting his son right in front of him, and he said, what are you arresting him for? What are you doing? And so they said, sir, step back. He said, but that's my son. What are you doing? He didn't understand. If you don't move back and you keep inquiring, they think you're getting ready to strike out at him. So then you get arrested, okay, for interfering, and you get a ticket, and you get taken down, and now you really ain't mm-hmm. with your son who's being taken away. And he was crying, and he wanted me to understand that was his only son, and he needed to know, because he was a good boy, what was happening. And I said, and I totally understood him. I said, this is what I want you to know what the law says. And this is what I want you to know if this ever happens again. I said, you just take a few steps back so you don't look threatening to the officer. And you say, where are you taking him? Because I am going to follow in my car. And you follow all the way to wherever, whatever station they take him to. And then you go in and you talk to the people at the desk, and then you take a seat until they give you all the information on your son. Because now they have booked him, and now you can call a lawyer. That's what you do. And he said, thank you for telling me, Judge. He said, I said, your ticket, once you pay your court costs, if you don't do anything else for 6 months, this case gets dismissed as though it never happened. It's a misdemeanor, and it will be off of your record. I said, you have not done, you're not a criminal-minded person. I understood exactly what you did. That's why I gave you the court costs, and I gave you the sentence I did so it would erase. He said, but I just wanted you
to know.
I tell
you what.
I said, I know. Yep, that's all he wanted.
You just said mm-hmm. could save a lot of lives.
Thank you.
That it's typically, I won't say easy, but, you know, to respond to some of the interactions the way you just have, I think could really help so many people going forward in some of the
yes.
situations they're confronted in. So you're not the first one that I've had on. I had a couple of retired police officers from New York on a couple of 3 years ago, and they said basically the same thing. You know, you got to do it that way. And I'm
mm-hmm.
glad to hear you explaining it that way. And I'm also hearing that, you know, what you do is so, you're fulfilling your purpose, and I love the fact that you're operating out of don't count people out because of what they've done. That's an amazing approach to you being in the seat that you sit in from day to day. And I want people to know where they can get this phenomenal book, and if you can just tell us how to I definitely did put the .com information on as far as your website, but I know it's on Amazon as well. Is there
right.
any other way
right.
that you'd like to direct them to get your book?
Yeah, if they go on my website, which of course has a direct connection with Amazon and a link, but it's www.judge.com. Leanya, L-E-O-N-I-A, Leon, like Leon, and yeah, L-E-O-N-I-A .com.
Mm-hmm.
And
awesome.
If they go on that, it'll take them right to my site, and it has a whole lot of things. They can see a trailer on me and my sister, Pam Perry had hired a guy who was extremely good at doing trailers, and he's extremely good at everything he does, and he made
mm-hmm.
that, and it brought tears to my eyes when I first saw it. I mean, it was like right out of my head. I mean, he read the book, and he knew the journey my sister and I had been on, and
mm-hmm.
and even after she passed, I had to learn from that. That was the hardest thing for me to learn, and people will understand
sure.
this when they read the book, is that a lot of my friends, particularly my judge friends, they said, we rarely see them apart. We always know one is around the corner. If you see one is close by somewhere. And they had this joke, you know. And we would go up and we would speak. People even wanted us to marry them. In other words, I don't want just one judge to marry me. I want both of them. Both of them. So we used to split up the vows. We would, and this is something people wanted for their wedding. I had judges
mm-hmm.
who wanted us swearing them in. They didn't want the chief judge. They wanted me and Leona to swear them in. And so it was kind of funny. You know, we knew that it brought a lot of attention to whatever that event was for them. But now she was gone, and it was like everything we did, I knew I had a person 100% behind me. If I was the one who would come up with these different crazy ideas of to do this or to do that, and my sister would look at me, and she would question me, and then she'd say, okay. And then, you know, even when I wanted to run for judge, and she said, why? We're doing great. Why? And I said, because I want to reach more people. When I got through talking to her, she said, well, then I'm going to be your campaign manager, and then we got to get busy. And so, you know, it wasn't this big thing where I have to convince her. She listened. She knew. She knew. She understood me. And so even when I campaigned, I couldn't be at all the churches. It was just too many here in Detroit. Leona would take the list. Every weekend we would have a list of churches, and Leona would do five, and I would do these five or three or whatever. And she would speak on behalf of me. She would speak of, this is my sister, and blah, 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 and this is why you should vote for her. And when my sister finished, they said, we voting for you. My sister said, no, not me, my sister. And then we voting for you. And Leona said, oh, heck, all right. So, you know, she was like, they would take another 10 minutes to keep explaining, but people knew. They saw two of us on the literature. They said, send one to the bench. Our billboards said the same thing, that we were known as the Twins for Justice before I ran, as lawyers. And so they said, but send one to the bench. You know, we didn't do it at the same time, but she campaigned for me. So when she ran, I campaigned for her, and her campaigning for Leona was different than her campaigning for me. And she said, this is hard. I said, yeah, all the pressure and the stress is on you because you're the one running. I said, I'm relaxed. I can go out here and talk about you all day. I said,
oh,
but
how beautiful.
It's different when it's on you. And
mm-hmm.
and it, nothing, like she came in second for the primary, and her team, she had a team of, I would say, 10 to 12 really committed people. I had, when I ran, I had over 100 people on my committee. I don't know where all these people came from, but they would come from meeting after meeting. Then when Leona ran, I think people thought, oh, well, this one's going to get in, so I don't have to go out there and do all that work I did for the other one. So Leona's down to 10 or 12 people. She said, how come you had over 100 folks and I got 10 or 12? I said, but you look at the 12 you got. Look how hardworking they
mm-hmm.
are. And she said, you're right. I said, you have a core group. I had a core group within that 100. I said, because those 100 didn't come to every meeting. Your 12 are there, come rain or high water. They nothing stops them. Nothing stops them. And I said, the bottom line is, I said, they're always there. So when she came in second, but she made the primary, all of us were a little down, and she said, now we got to roll up our sleeves and get really busy. She said, Leona said, Leanya and I are going to Las Vegas because we planned a trip for 3 days. And then we're coming back, and we're going to roll up our sleeves because now it's the general election. And so they said they couldn't help but get enthusiastic because Leona was such a positive person. You were not going to stay gloomy around Leona. And she said, we're going to come out. We're going to have the signs that I put up that they stole out of the yard a couple of nights before the election. They had went through all the city of Detroit and took every sign of Leona's out of every yard, every yard.
Wow.
And Leona was upset. And so she said, you can't overnight put all those signs that she had bought and that people were dispensing all the city. You can't replace them in a night. You just can't. But when you have a team of people going out, and their job is to pull up every sign they see, and we got calls all night. They came in my yard and they took your sign. And, you know, Leona was sitting there. She didn't say nothing. She's quiet. I was angry. She was quiet. And when we came back and she came in number two, she said, I'm making the signs twice as big as they were. She said, this time they can't pull them out. They will have to stand up there and struggle. By this time, someone's coming out. And when those signs were so big, Leona got, you couldn't pull them out the yard. You couldn't do anything with those signs. And people said, and not only that, I'm going to put our faces on them. She said, I'm putting our face on one guy. We asked the barbershop guys. We asked everybody. He said, yeah, go ahead, young lady. You can put your sign on in my yard right here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wake up, have my cup of coffee, and look at them two pretty girls look at me. Mm-hmm. I started laughing. I didn't say anything. I said, the bottom line is that everybody let us put these signs all over all the neighborhoods, all the stores, everywhere. And Leona said to me, she said, if you hadn't been such a good judge, I wouldn't get this response from the community. She said, of them wanting the other one on there too. She said, if you'd been nasty, she said, they'd have said, oh, heck no. We got one on there. Get rid of her. No. So she said, but because of that, this has made it easier for me. And if I can be half of the judge that you are, she said, I'll be happy. And my sister was more than half of the judge I was. She was great on the bench. But the bottom line is that, you know, and I mentioned in the book, I said, her court reporter, I quoted her. She said, a lady came in there hollering and screaming like the Holy Ghost had hit her in my sister's courtroom. And she said, oh, praise God. She said, for Judge Lord. And the owner looked at her, and she said, you have saved my daughter. She's now off drugs. You put her in the program. And this is before I even did drug court. Both of us were doing this. And so the lady said, thank you, Jesus. She just was going on and on. And this stuck with her court reporter. This stuck with her. Even a few days before her death, when she put another lady into a program, and she told her, she said, do you know how beautiful you are? And the lady looked around in the courtroom, and the court reporter said this at my sister's funeral. She said, I looked at the judge, and I looked at the lady and said, who is the judge talking to? And she said, the good lady said, are you talking to me? And the owner said, yes. And she said, because I see what you can be. She said, if you let me help you. And then the lady started crying, and she said, I need help. She said, I will help you. She looked at the guy who's sitting in the courtroom, a lot of them that want to put women back on the street. She said, you might as well leave, because I'm staying here, and I'm going to be put in a program today, and I'm not coming back. And she sat there, and Helen, that was her court clerk's name, she got up there and she told that at her funeral. She said Judge Lloyd could see way beyond what we could physically see in front of us. She knew what this lady could be. She had done it before with women before. So, and that was one of the reasons when I got approached by the Sheriff's Department, and he said, will you help us with Project Fresh Start, which was all only dedicated to ladies of the evening out there that were drug addicted. And I said, absolutely, without hesitation, without hesitation. I said, I knew what she had just told me. We were on her patio. She was cooking some barbecue, and she was telling me, this is what I did today. And she told me that same story that Helen had got up there and talked about at her funeral. So when I could do it on a much larger scale, absolutely. And some of those women went through a two-year program with me and became counselors. Some became practical nurses. Some became registered nurses. Some are high up at the Salvation Army, which is a big, huge corporation. But they're up mm-hmm. there helping women who were like themselves. You know, they're giving right. back what was given to them. And that's what our amazing. Both of our lives were for. You know, that makes you happy about your life, the journey that you are on. And that's any pain that we had on that journey, it was to be used for good. It was to be used for good, and it was for us to learn, what's the lesson in this? What lesson do I get from this? You know, and if something's hard, I was determined it wasn't going to break me. It wasn't going to break me. And my sister would be my cheer team, mm-hmm. and I'd say the same thing to her. You can't, and as I say in the book and as I say to the listeners, you cannot let anything out here break you. You might have to regroup. You may have to go back and look and make some modifications in the plan that you have, and you make the steps to your plan, but you take one step at a time. And like you were saying about the tortoise, that's right. You know, you may be going inch by inch, but everything is a cinch. Just keep moving. Just keep moving, you know. And my mother used to say, trouble don't last always. She used to quote that to us. And I said, yes, I wrote a play, and I was raising money for children with AIDS, babies born with AIDS, and I was a lawyer at the time. And I wrote the play, but that was my background. In the book, you hear about the background of being in performing arts and how I taught all that. And so I decided, as a lawyer, I put that to use too. And I wrote this play. And I remember, and Judge Mathis was part of all of this at the time, and he kept saying, have you wrote the play? Have you wrote the play? I said, no, it has to come to you. And he looked at me strange. Come to you? I said, yes. You just don't write something. And Leona would ask me sometimes, she'd say, Leona, you wrote anything yet? No. And then one day I was listening to some church music on my patio, and I'm listening. I'm just listening. And I started writing. See, he's going to send it to you when you're supposed to have it. And you can't make it come before it's going to come. And then I started writing. And I wrote, and I wrote. And my sister said, you've been sitting out there writing. I said, I wrote the play. And so my sister said, you wrote the play now? I said, mm-hmm. And I said, and we're going to have about 20 choirs in this play. My sister said, what? It came out fantastic. It came out fantastic.
I'm sure.
And at the very end, when you're doing the opening and the closing, and all of them came out, I had the risers set up. I had the union people set those risers up within seconds. Everybody came out dressed in white. And they were up there, and when they wrote an article about this, they said, the twins, we know they're lawyers. We know they were teachers. We didn't know they were playwrights. And they said, what are they going to do next? And I just kind of chuckled. I said, there was a call to help raise money. I had to use what skills I had to help raise money. And it was a good call. Mm-hmm. It's just that I had to wait until the Spirit moved me. And then there was no stopping me. There was no stopping me,
right.
You know, and one line that came, you said you understand. One man said he played a minister, and he said, and it came out of old spiritual, back in the spiritual days with the slaves and stuff, and then, of course, in the civil rights movement, ain't nobody going to turn me around. Ain't nobody going to turn me around. And that
love
is
it.
What. I say to everybody, to kids in high school, when I talk to the graduations, when you're on a path of excellence, don't you let nobody, I don't care who they are, I don't care what they're trying to holler at you and tell you that you can't do this, you turn you around. That's what my book is about. And a lot of people, the feedback I get is that one girl said, I feel like I can conquer the world now, Judge. I feel like I can conquer the world. I said that. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted.
Well, I'll tell you what, all that you have shared today is certainly a wonderful inspiration, and how you're doing things with such innovation is just really special. We're at the tail end, and I'm going to have to wrap, but I want you to know it's just been a joy to have you share everything that you have. And may God continue to bless your legacy, your leadership, all that's going forward. And I was going to ask you, one of my last questions was going to be, what would you say to people who don't get to be in front of you, but you've just said all of that in the last few minutes of what the things that you have said. So those are words that I feel like people can just get on and, you know, with wings and just take off. And I'm hoping that, you know, that they do that. That's really one of the goals behind what I do and why I do this show. So thank you so, so much for being who you are and doing what you do. And I do pray, too. It just inspires other people to take the consciousness and the heart and spirit that you have and realize that, you know, people do want to be seen and heard, and how quickly you can turn something, a situation around, a life around, by just caring. So thank you very, very much. I look forward to talking to you
again.
Thank
you.
Anytime.
Well, you have all my contacts, so you can reach me.
Yeah.
You can reach me anytime
again,
you want to.
Judge Leonia.
Okay.
Just appreciate you, and you enjoy your day. Stay blessed, and you stay safe, okay?
You too. Stay blessed. Everybody stay safe. All right.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. All righty. Take care. Bye. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in today for that awesome and inspiring conversation from Judge Leonia. She's quite an amazing person. And as I said, one of the most special people in the universe. I see it, and I know you heard it. So please take a look at her website at judgeleonia.com. That's JUDGELEONIA.com. You'll find everything there and more of her story. So take a look, please. I'm going to look forward to talking to you again next Monday. So you keep a watch out for that. In the meantime, you be good, be blessed, and be awesome. See you soon.